write in the book that, ultimately the struggle over the charter school revolution comes down to a struggle between two competing visions for how to combat racial inequality. Do you have a sense of who is winning?
I was sort of roughly talking about this this tension over whether or not social change and uplift needs to be self-determined and led by a given community or can be imposed by the outside. And I think there's no question that the current school reform in New Orleans has been largely, not entirely, but largely imposed from the outside. But I think that it's complicated because I don't necessarily know that school reform and charter schools' greatest critics are necessarily speaking for low-income Black families either. What I would like to see both in Baton Rouge and New Orleans is a much more sustained and aggressive effort to reach families and kids who are in the schools to see what they want. And I think that if both extremes did that, they might be surprised by what they hear. And I think that's actually the main voice that's lacking right now.
In the time that you spent in the schools in New Orleans, how did that missing piece affect what was going on?
You know, a lot of these schools have very, very distinct and routinized school cultures that are very, very focused on college preparation and very, very structured around rules. And I think if school officials and school staff don't take the time to explain to families and kids why they're doing that, it's not destined to succeed in the long run.
I think you sort of see that with Gerald Lynn's story in the book, mm-hmm. where she is kind of going back and forth with really feeling very much oppressed by these rules in the school that she's in, just absolutely hating it and rebelling against it, skipping class and sort of getting off track and being mm-hmm. ambivalent about whether college was for her or why.
Yeah, no, and I talked to a lot of kids in schools like Psy Academy and Kip Renaissance for this book, and the thing they kept saying is, you know, if teachers took the time and said, you know, this is why I'm asking you to do X, you know, this is why I'm asking you to walk in a straight line, that mattered to them. It was when they felt like there were these arbitrary rules that were being imposed that they rebelled against them and were much more likely to get into trouble. And so, I mean, Gerald Lynn was an interesting case because she would go back and forth between being really bought into school and really turned off by it. And I think she kind of vacillated in the way that a lot of kids do. And there are some who end up sort of being caught and captured and others who end up being really repelled by it and dropping out. And I think it's a pretty thin line for a lot of kids.
Is there something there, too, about if you have a teacher like the teacher that you profile in this book who is coming from Harvard, who is a white guy from the North, mm-hmm. who has a very different background that might have presumed literally from his birth these rules and these destinations in terms of college and beyond, that they don't think that they have to explain it?
Yeah, no, I think it is. A lot of the teachers, you know, grew up sort of dreaming of going to Harvard or Princeton or Yale, and a lot of the families that I talk to are really scared by that. They want their kids to go on and be successful and possibly go to college, but they're scared of the idea of them leaving New Orleans. So I guess that's what I mean by that there needs to be sort of more of a dialogue on the grassroots level between school staff and families so that they can be sharing kind of what their aspirations and goals are and the ways in which they might be similar and the ways in which they might conflict so that you don't see some of the culture clashes of the kind that you saw at some of the schools that I profiled, like Kip Renaissance.
I picked up this book, you know, there's been so much talk. The governor is going around the country literally right now talking about the school reforms in New Orleans and how successful it is and touting it as the solution to all that ails American education. And so I was half expecting when I picked up Hope Against Hope to find out whether or not that was true.
Yeah, you know, I mean, constantly when I was writing it, the question I kept hearing people ask was, is it working? Is it working? And that question was frustrating to me because there's just not a yes or no answer. And really what I wanted to show was the way it's playing out in people's lives, for good and for bad.
7 years after Katrina, 7 years after this all began, it still is really in its infancy.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any way around that. I mean, a lot of these schools are just graduating their first classes of students, if that. So it's going to be a few years before we see whether or not they're graduating from college at higher rates and are able to find family supporting incomes in New Orleans. And so I think throughout American education, there's too much of a tendency to come to these snap judgments. And I hope that people are patient in seeing how this plays out.
Sarah Carr, thank you so much for sharing this book and for writing it. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you again.
Okay, thanks for having me on.